Hi, everyone. This is your co-host, Stu, and I have the pleasure to be with the paranormalist, Patty Wilson. Hi, Patty.
Hello. How are you tonight?
I'm going to say I'm fairly well, because that's the expected answer, right?
No, I mean, we can always say the truth, but I know I'm a little bit tuckered out tonight. It's been a busy weekend.
Yeah, I'm in a bit of pain, and, you know, whenever you're in pain, you kind of get, you think a little bit differently, but.
And you get exhausted easier. People don't realize how mental pain is.
Well, I got my bucket of coffee to try to energize me a little bit.
I've had one cup of coffee this entire day, just one, so.
I'm not going to go into it.
I'm sure it's more than one cup of coffee for you today.
I think we're in the double digits, so.
Not shocked.
Yeah. But I would like to thank everyone for joining us for this episode. If you haven't already, please consider clicking the subscribe button. And if you are subscribed, we thank you very much. Click the like button to get notified when we release new content. And we do publish on both Rumble and YouTube for the video platform. We do Rumble first only because they are so much more friendly to content creators. So YouTube, I hope you're listening. And with that, what are we doing for tonight's episode?
Well, tonight's going to be more of a conversation, maybe a retelling of some stuff. I have had a wonderful family evening last evening with a bunch of my family, and stories came up that I had never before.
I love your family stories.
Well, we got plenty of them, let me tell you.
All right.
So for some of you, I'm gonna make it a little bit redundant. I have to explain a little background for a couple of the stories to make sense and what have you. But so I was talking to family, and as I said, with the subject almost irresistibly turns toward the paranormal. And I wish you all could come and be with us when this happens. It's like this great big round table of everybody sharing a story, and then it passes on and the next one goes, ooh, I've got a story to tell. And then that one goes and it comes back again. And it's so much fun. And all the kids are like wide-eyed. The little ones are like wide-eyed listening and asking questions. And it's just a really, it's what it must have looked like 150 years ago when families gathered together at the hearth and told stories on a cold and, you know, spooky night. So, I mean, we were in a house with electricity and all that, but the ambiance and there was no TV. It was just the stories and us. And I love those nights when they happen.
And so, hopefully indoor plumbing.
Well, hey, it's overrated, okay? I grew up without indoor plumbing, believe it or not.
One of my, actually more than one. Whenever I was growing up, my father's grandmother was still alive, so my great-grandmother. And when we visited, we literally visited the outhouse on a little bit of an uphill going up. I always wondered why they dug it uphill from the house, but hey.
Yeah, that's a little, I mean, because ours was always downhill, you know, down like, past the gardens and everything. But yeah, I grew up until I was 13 years old. We didn't have indoor plumbing. We had a pitcher pump in the out kitchen. You carried the water in, heated it on the cook stove in kettles, and then took it and dumped it in the bathtub. And there was just a piece of rain spouting that ran from the basement where the water ran into the rain spouting in the basement and ran out the window. And that was how it worked. So, like I said, indoor plumbing is way overrated. I don't remember ever once missing it. I knew what it was. We had it when I went to my grandma's house. But, and this property here that I'm on now did not have indoor plumbing on it until 1981, 82.
Nice. One thing I can say about the lack of indoor plumbing is that you don't need plungers.
You don't? No, not at all. There's never any plumbing problems that way. But so anyhow, we live out in the woods in the middle of nowhere. Most of my family, not all of my family and I. And we were sitting there talking. It was this really cool, crisp night. And one of my family members said about, there's this story I've told about the Zoot Suit Man. So now this is a family curse story, just so you know. So There is this figure that has unfortunately visited multiple times every member of my family for at least three generations. So my mother for sure, myself and my sister, and then my children. And he always appears in a coat or a cloak. He has what I call zoot suit pants, which are these long baggy pants with like a tiny pinstripe in them. They were made popular in Southern California during like the 1950s. And a lot of the like gang kind of guys will wear them, and they were considered really dapper. And he would wear a slouch brim hat, this big wide hat like you would see in the 1800s in a Victorian movie. And those were some of the things that were common to him. The other thing that was common to him was that his face was rotted. He was blonde hair, about 5'7", and his always would keep his head down, and then he would raise his head up slowly, and you could see that his face was completely rotted. I don't know how else to explain him. He was like the most vile, evil, gave you this horrible, terrifying feeling. I had nightmares about him for almost a year when I was 18 years old. And that's when I actually found out that he was generational, because I was finally, my sister was telling me she was having nightmares. I was having nightmares. So finally we told our mom, and our mom got really mad. And she told me, she's like, this is your fault because you read way too many paranormal stories. So she was mad, and she told me to go upstairs and get bedding and take it to her room so she can make her bed. And when I did, she told me to sit down, and then she told me that the first time her encounter of meeting the Zoot Suit Man, and that was her first realization that he was coming for her children. And I think that's what really had her angry, and she didn't know where to put it. So she snapped at me, but then she told me the truth, and I understood why she was frightened and angry. So that is the story. Up until now, all three of my sons have seen him. My mother, my sister, myself, but have never met anybody else who had ever had an encounter. And my one son was sitting there, and he's like, I've met somebody else who met the Zoot Suit Man. And that's what I said, that look on your face of what? And he goes, yeah. So he has a good friend where he works at, and the gentleman is a lot older than him, old enough to even be his dad. He's a lot older. Kind of a really quiet, polite, religious gentleman, very sweet, very, very dear friend and mentor to my son, for which I'm eternally grateful. And one day he came to my son's house, and he said to him, not so long ago, do you remember those creepy stories you told about that guy, that weird guy in the crazy clothes? And my son said, yes. And he said, what did you call him? And he said, well, tell me what you saw first. Thinking, you know, nobody's ever seen the Zoot Suit Man. He couldn't possibly be meaning that. He was kind of confused. So the gentleman told him that he saw this man in his room, and then the figure appeared. He had a long coat on, which you could definitely consider a cape, like a long coat in the dark. Big slouch brim hat. And when he raised his head, his eyes glowed red. He couldn't see his face, but he could smell him. And the figure was smoking a cigarette. And you could see that cherry at the end of the cigarette very clearly. And he said the figure just imbued in him this horror, absolute horror. And as soon as he saw it, he said, all I could think of is you telling me that story. I knew it was the same being. I just knew it. And it was just completely filled with evil. And he sat up, and he's trying to figure out what to do. And the figure kind of laughed at him and just faded away. But he said, I want you to understand, it smoked a cigarette, a real physical cigarette. It left the smell in my house. Nobody smoked in his home. He didn't smoke in his home. And for hours and hours, his bedroom was so stinky with the smoke, he couldn't stay in the room. So my son explained to him about what he had experienced growing up. He goes, yeah, that's exactly what I saw. That's exactly it. And he said, I went to my pastor. I talked to my pastor. My pastor didn't know what it was. He just told me to pray about it. It'd all go away. And he's like, but I got to figure this out. I've got to. And my son told him, he said, I want you to leave it alone. This is not something you want to play with. This is not something you want to call into your life. It took years for us to get him out of our lives, to keep, you know, right as of now, all the grandchildren safe. And you don't want to bring him into your life, into your family's lives. You just don't. And he said, Mom, I was really concerned, so I thought I would let you know what happened. And that was the first time I've ever met anybody who claims to have seen the Zip Suit Man. I have to tell you, I was really concerned and a little surprised, but more concerned than anything else. Because, you know, he was determined to make sense out of this. And frankly, there are things in the paranormal world that you can't make sense of. You just have to leave them go. And we've shut all the doors we could think of to this figure. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, if somebody else besides your immediate family experienced this, and I'm sure you've researched it to see if anyone else has also encountered this entity. Anything?
Well, to be honest with you, my grandmother died when I was 12. My aunts, two of my three aunts were very, very religious, wouldn't even consider talking about this stuff. My mom rarely would talk about it, even though she's the person that she had that experience. So I honestly don't know if anybody else in the family ever saw it. She always blamed the fact that she had been studying to go to a Christian college in Cleveland, Tennessee, to become a missionary. She was 17 years old. And she had been kind of agonizing over, should I do it? Shouldn't I do it? Should I do it? Shouldn't I do it? You know, that all that fear that comes up whenever you're 17 or 18 and you're looking at maybe leaving everything you know behind. And, you know, do I have a calling from God to do this thing? Is this my own ego at play? That kind of stuff, you know? And so she was battling her own heart at that moment in time. And that's when she first encountered it. And it had told her she would not go and be a missionary. She did go, and she did, but she didn't complete school, but she did later on become what's called a domestic missionary. So she succeeded in her task, felt her calling, and she took that calling seriously. And so she always blamed it on that, on her trying to fight the devil by going to become a missionary, and that it took it seriously. I think she believed it was a demon or maybe even Satan. I don't know what it was. It definitely is not a positive thing. Now, the story that I just told, the one from that my son related, reminded me also of Hatman stories. You know, there are these bizarre stories of men in black, the black suits, you know, the shadow people and stuff like that. There are some very odd stories of that where they have some three-dimensional, normally they're just a black figure, but sometimes their eyes will be red or yellow or something will glow on them or something. And I wondered also if it could be that, but my son seemed very adamant and I trust his instinct. He's been dealing with this most of his life. Of the three boys, he was the one who got the biggest dose of it, sadly.
Interesting. I was thinking it was literally less than a week ago. Again, I mentioned I'm having some pain. It's in my hip, so it makes sleeping difficult. So I had a rather bizarre dream that featured a figure that I know I had seen before, but I couldn't place it. And then I realized it was actually the actor who played the Candyman.
Oh.
And, you know, he was in the dream. And of course, in dreams, you can do things you can't do in otherwise. So I was very angry and shouted a few expletives at this person. And when that didn't do, and he could touch me in this dream. And again, I want to make this perfectly clear. It was a dream, so this didn't actually happen to me. But I did a big old roundhouse kick and my leg went right through him, you know, so... If you could see me in real life, you know that roundhouse kick is not something that I'm capable of.
Don't buy that. He's a ninja.
But it was weird though, because it took me a couple days to figure out where I had seen the person.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that like a lot of us, we have dreams and they're just dreams, but there are also dreams that stick with us for some reason. And I think those dreams might have some meaning in our life or might be disturbing or stirring up something from our life. And so it's hard to tell, but I have to tell you, I was a little rattled last night to find out that somebody else potentially saw this figure and that he might be reaching out to. It's the first time that there's been a chance that he reached out to anybody in our circle of people who wasn't blood relative.
I could see the concern for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always thought it was contained, and as long as I kept careful watch over my family, I was all right. But now I got to think about, is it possible that somebody that just is a good friend or knows, and I don't know him personally very well, I've met him like 3 or 4 times, but just for a few moments, but that somebody that was that important to my son, like this guy is his best friend probably of all time. And that he might have inadvertently somehow come into that. Perhaps it was because he's religious and seeking the other side in the light, and this thing is offended that Daniel and he are friends. I don't know. Could be nothing to do with that at all. But it's just, it's something I'm mulling over right now. Mm-hmm. I wish I could always have all the answers right away, but a lot of times it takes me sometimes weeks, months, sometimes even years to figure something out. But I'm definitely keeping this one on the radar. And yeah, it was just kind of an uncomfortable feeling. And then I was for those who don't know, my adult life has been, well, my life has always been filled with paranormal stuff, but it got really intense when I grew up and moved away and got married and all of that. It got very intense. And I used to tell stories about this and my, because we all lived on the same property. My father-in-law would tell everybody I was crazy. I was just imagining it. It was my, you know, she's just creative and imaginative and stuff like this. And then I was talking last night, as I said, and my one son said to me, he said, I want you to know that Pap couldn't admit to you that he had experiences, but before he got sick, he told me a bunch of stories. And he told him about a figure he saw walking on the property, and he approached it, and that was a man, just a shadow of a man. And as he approached it, it raised its head and looked directly at him, and its eyes were yellow and blinked shut a couple times. And at that moment, that was it. He just turned around and walked away. And saw his own father on this property. So my father-in-law saw his father on this property, which is really interesting because his father never really was on this property often. He had no attachment to it, but that he would be haunting his son is the only thing reason I could think of him being here. He's been seen multiple times, my son's grandfather, or great-grandfather, rather, excuse me, great-grandfather. He was seen in the original structure, the original house, by multiple family members over the year who physically knew him very, very well, like daughters and daughters-in-law and, you know, things like that. And my son said to me last night, he said, I felt bad sometimes because I knew that you weren't lying, but Pap would never admit it. He just couldn't. And he asked me to keep my secrets. And he told me several stories of stuff like that that had been going on. I do know that later in his life, before the Alzheimer's hit, he had two experiences where he was in his own home, which is on the property as well. And he got up in the middle of the night because he heard the floorboards moving. You know how trailers, the floors are kind of, they'll make the pop and sounds, you know, when you walk in them after they've been and settled for a while. And the one night he swore he encountered his father standing in the hallway, looking back the hallway at their bedroom. And he was so rattled, he did admit that one, even to me. Like he was freaked out. He had never seen him. He had never seen him in that house. He'd always seen him in the original property, but not in his home, which was a newer place just put in. So I never knew that until about the other places, the other stories, the other things that had happened here. And he had multiple stories of seeing figures on the property, of hearing phantom screams and going to check them and there being nobody there. And I told the story about the phantom cat that chased them through the woods one night. And, you know, my son was about 9 years old and it left quite an imprint on his memory. So there's,
go ahead. I was gonna say, it's amazing that the some people, the lengths they go to deny, you know, and just, you know, maybe it's a coping mechanism or whatever, but they wait, you know, so you never know how many experiences that people have had that they're just not willing to share for fear of being labeled a crackpot or somebody in need of some attention.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I understand it. I don't even hold that against him. My mother was very.
And even if it runs in the family, you know, you may still want to try to avoid that. But
yeah, my mother was the same way. Like, she had all these paranormal experiences and she would never admitted any of that to me till the first thing she ever admitted was the Zoot Suit Man. And that was only after we had had multiple events and told her about them. And then when I was in my late 20s, I'd say we had dinner one time at a restaurant and she finally admitted all these different paranormal things that happened in her life that she had kept quiet, that I had had experiences and she would deny that they happened and stuff like that. And I literally broke down and was sobbing because she admitted it. And I said, why? Why would you make me feel alone with this and a fool? And she said, because it can't be true, because God is. And I really was challenged by that for a while.
Well, but on the flip side, I mean, if God exists, which I do believe, then the antithesis of God, the demons, you know, also exist and should be equally talked about.
And it was just so emotional to hear somebody say you weren't crazy and it's not just in your head after a lifetime of being told it's just in your head.
That's kind of like the, I don't know if I had to think about it. It's the pull the covers over your head kind of thing. I mean, we can protect people by, put your covers over your head. If you don't see it, it doesn't exist. If it doesn't exist or if you don't see it, it can't hurt you. Yeah, maybe, you know.
Yeah, I think to some extent it is that. And I think like it just, she didn't know how to define it inside of her faith. And to my mother, her faith was everything all of her life to the day she died. One of the saddest things about her stroke was that she could no longer really read and do what she used. You know, I'm saying she could read, but it was like, this is a woman who spoke Greek and Aramaic and wrote Greek and Aramaic. And, you know, and she, yeah, she was a biblical scholar and she just couldn't go down those paths after the stroke. And it frustrated her. Like she knew she should have been able to. That was very frustrating. So this, like her faith was everything to her entire life. And admitting that somehow to her seemed almost like breaking her faith with God for a few moments to just say to me, I know that these things really happened, honey. It's okay. And like, I've made peace with all that. I made peace with the fact that like there's places in the Bible where they talk about like the ghost of Samuel and different things. So we know that these things existed. But she couldn't go there emotionally and psychologically. She just couldn't. And then there was a couple other stories, like the house that we lived in when my kids were growing up had a lot of really bizarre things. So when we first got married, we moved into a trailer. We bought the trailer. We knew that the trailer had no problems to the best of our ability to tell. Like we bought it from the people that originally bought it. It was a young couple with a boy who was mentally handicapped. And he was a real nice kid. Nobody had any real trauma there. From the looks of it, it seemed everybody was okay. I know the mom had a nervous breakdown. I think it was because of dealing with the little boy, because it was just so emotional to deal with him at times, because he was profoundly struggling in some points. And that's about the worst thing that ever happened in the building. But once we put it on this property, then things started happening. And we would have refrigerator doors open and close on their own, cabinets open and close. Our son would say that he didn't want to sleep in his bedroom. And I think I've told this story, but to kind of give you an idea of what we're talking about, he was probably 5 or 6, old enough to explain things. And he kept saying he didn't want to sleep in his room. And we would find him on the floor in the living room, on the couch in the living room, sleeping in the hallway outside the bedroom door, our bedroom door, things like that. And his dad was getting really frustrated with him about it. So one night I told him, I said, look, honey, I'm just going to come in and sleep with you. And I'll do this for a few nights until you feel comfortable. There's nothing there. You know, and I didn't feel anything other than a little creepy heebie-jeebies. But then I thought that might just be because of what he was saying, you know. So I go in and I lay down in bed with him. Now, the way it was set up, it's an old trailer. You know, there's like a little tiny spot for the bed. And then right across from it was a built-in little dresser. The closet had the little sliding doors. And then behind in the back of the closet was a panel you slid aside to get to the hot water heater. And so it's this classic 1980s, you know, trailer. And I'm laying there in bed with him, can't get comfortable because it's just really hard for two people to sleep in a single bed. And I flip over, and we always kept the closet door open because he had a toy box in there. He could pick his toys up and put them in the toy box. And so we just left it open, and he could do that. And I look, and standing there in the darkness, I don't see really the shadow of the person. I just see the eyes, because the eyes are glowing, and they're glowing gold. And I'm blinking, and then I see it move, like the darkness shifted. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's whatever that is. That's real. That's moving. Like, I can see it swaying in the darkness. And it stepped forward into the, like, out of the panel and into the closet itself. And it was like headed in our directions. And at that point, I panicked. I jumped up, grabbed him and the blanket and everything, and just took off, slammed the door shut as soon as I got him into the hallway. And then he's like crying, and he's like, you know, what happened? What's wrong? And I'm like, nothing, nothing, nothing. I saw a mouse. I saw a mouse. And I took him to the living room and put him back to sleep. And he saw it. My mother saw it when she was there. She would stay in his room when she was there. And it got to the point where we just didn't make him stay in that room at night at all. Ever. It was just a storage room for his stuff because of it. So that was the kind of stuff that was happening. It was significant. It's profound. Mm-hmm. We would get up in the morning and we thought it was always him. But interestingly enough, there were an awful lot of fights over this stuff. Things like the refrigerator door hanging open at the beginning. His dad thought it was him just being a brat, leaving the door hanging open. We would find the canned goods and like maybe leftovers in his bedroom under the bed or stacked up on the floor in front of the refrigerator, which was right beside the cabinet where the canned goods were kept. Things like that. Eventually, things developed that I left and I took the other two boys, and the oldest one wanted to stay. So he stayed for a while. And I guess at that point in time, his dad had experiences that he now could no longer explain, because like Danny would be sleeping on the living room couch and the refrigerator opened or the cabinets opened or things moved. And when we moved into the new house, it was the same thing. It was just that kind of, and literally it was like maybe 150, 200 yards apart. So whatever it was, it just came where we went, apparently. Mm. And it continued to get worse as he got older and had more energy to feed from, almost like a poltergeist phenomena.
That's what I was thinking. I mean, a lot of things you were describing, except for seeing the shadow with the gold eyes. Mm-hmm. Sound very, very, you know, poltergeist-like.
Yeah. And then as a teenager, the new house is the house where the he had the nightmares where he was being stuck in these briars and he pulled the blankets back and his legs were scratched up and had like thorn marks all over him, and there was blood all over the sheets from that. And I knew that there were no blood on the sheets. I had changed the sheets earlier that evening before he went to bed. Stuff like that would happen, like physical stuff would happen. one night, their dad was standing in the kitchen making a sandwich, and he saw the boy go into the bedroom, and he saw a shadow go. Then he saw a second shadow peel out of the wall and follow him into the bedroom. The story I didn't know is that one night they were arguing, and a cup picked itself up and began to like spin in the air and threw itself. And like they were fighting and arguing back and forth and like stomping back and forth, you know, yelling, and one would go into the bedroom and the other would go. And it, this was like one of these nitpicky arguments. It just kept going for a while. And then when the cup smashed, his dad came out and he's like, "What are you doing smashing the cups?" And he's like, "I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I didn't do it." And it took a long time for his dad to believe him. And it only happened because his dad had something similar happen when he was 11.
Do you think whatever it was even purposefully causing short tempers or creating the situation that would be, you know, development of full-blown fights and things?
Completely believe that. I've always believed that since the very beginning. It fed off the anger, and it would set up situations. It would set Danny up a lot. It would, and whether it was a Zoot Suit Man or something else, I think there's something that was just separate and here on this property and had been for a long, long time based upon the family's history.
Knowing that you like history and looking up things, so was there anything else on the property?
So the best we can tell you, I don't know what was here. When the deed was done, it was just a swamp. Okay. But the story behind how the family got here is pretty evil. And then the man and his wife, the man's wife always told me, it was my grandfather-in-law, his wife always told me that he changed once he came here, that he became very evil, very hateful, very mean, like he would beat on people and stuff. And that it completely changed after they got here. So there was a lot of anger here at this place. Everything about the situation that brought them here, everything about how desperate they were. Like these people were, like people talk today and they're like, oh, like the, you know, this family's owned a piece of ground for like, you know, 50 years. Let me tell you, when these people came to this piece of ground, this was everything they had in the entire world. They had spent to buy this swamp. And he spent every day working in a coal mine and every evening trying to dig out swamp enough that he could get a piece of ground big enough to grow some food for his family. They lived in a lean-to for the summer months that first year, and then they dug the hole that would eventually be their basement, put boards over it, and she gave birth to two children in that. They were desperately poor people. They weren't, you know, landlords with all this ground and stuff. No, these people were fighting to literally not starve to death. So this ground was hard fought for. And, you know, so it's always been a hard scrabble place to a large extent. So, and you might say, well, then why does people keep it? There's also, there's like a family will that they're not giving it up. This is theirs. They fought hard for it. And they'll make it work somehow. And she did, the original lady, she did. She raised all her kids here, was a lovely, lovely woman. And his family's lived here now. Our kids, our grandkids are fourth generation. So whatever's been here came before that. And I think it started impacting at that point, or his anger over what happened that brought him here, brought it to manifest, one of the two.
Very curious. Yeah.
It is a curious thing. And so I've heard of stories like that before, and people doubt them, and they say, oh, it's exaggerations and stuff. But because I've lived through all this for the whole of my adult life, I'm not as doubting. I mean, I obviously have to be a little skeptical because people can make up stories, but I'm not as doubting. And then I have one more story, because this story was the creepiest story of the night. And I'm still chewing on it, to be honest. So when everything fell apart and I left, my oldest son stayed with his dad for a while. And one night, he was in bed and teenager at this point, and he, the bed fell apart, just collapsed. Well, it made a loud sound when it crashed to the ground, you know, crashed to the floor. And his dad didn't believe him, that he didn't do it on purpose, that he didn't jump on the bed or do something to break the bed. This is the story of what my son told me last night. And he does, I want to make sure everybody understands, he does not listen to the podcast. I rarely tell the podcast stories to anybody in my life. In fact, I'm forbidden by my middle boy because he doesn't want me to ruin the podcast. He's the only one of my kids that listen to it. And so, like, he'll say, I start a story, he'll go, is it going to be on the podcast? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, don't tell it. You'll ruin it for me, Mom. I look forward to that 50 some minutes every week. Mm-hmm. So I don't get to tell those stories. So my son, I know, did not hear this story. And this is what he told me. He's laying in bed and he said, I woke up and I could see these little figures, like fairies, fluttering around me in a circle, just going in a circle, going in a circle. And they're fluttering. And all I can hear is the humming, this humming sound. And they're fluttering all around above my head, above me, going in this big circle. And he said, I realize I'm being lifted off the bed, lifted upward. And he's like, I'm like a couple feet, 3, 4, 5 feet now up above the bed. And I start to really panic. I'm like, holy crap. How do I get down? What do I do? And I start praying, like, dear God, I don't know what to do, man. And he said, as soon as I said that, bam, from about 5 feet, I hit the bed full force. The bed bursts apart, the humming stops, and they're just gone. Now, all I could think of is when we go back to the fairy podcast, remember the one where I told the story about the cow?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's all I could think of. They were taking him. And he woke up and interrupted it.
Yeah, I would hope that, well, they put all the pieces back.
Yeah, seriously. But
it's, you know, when you started mentioning about the hum, and this is interesting, so many things that you've talked about, call it foreshadowing, just call it whatever. But two nights ago, I went into my bedroom and I could hear this buzzing, right? We got electronic stuff everywhere, right? So perfectly reasonable to think that there would be something electrical buzzing. So it sounded like it was coming from the corner where there's a nightstand there with a lamp and a charger. And there's an Echo Dot sitting there too. And I went over to that corner and I put my ear down. The moment I put my ear down, the sound came from this side. And I'm hearing this, and it does sound like an electrical hum. Now I've been around electrical things my whole life. Right. And it wasn't, and here in the North America, our electricity is 60 hertz. So everyone's heard that 60 hertz hum that gets bled into their electronic devices or things like that. This wasn't 60 hertz, which is what was a little odd. And it was the same thing, though. I heard it like that. And when I turned my head back the other way, this, like, the sound moved from side to side. I'm thinking, okay, is it bouncing off the wall? I mean, I started touching things to see if I could feel a vibration, or if I touched something, would the vibration stop? And it didn't. And I was like, boy, this is certainly weird. And eventually, I just said, okay, God, take care of it. I just left the room and didn't want to worry about it. But it's interesting that you mentioned that, but because I've told you I'm somewhat sensitive. I'm not anywhere near what, you know, we can mention first names, I think, like a Charlie or somebody like that.
Right.
But it was just such a weird sensation, you know, just hearing this hum. So for you to mention that now, it kind of made shivers go down my back. Yeah.
So, I'm telling everybody a little bit about my life. So I wanted to share all those stories. So foreshadowing is something that happens in my life all the time. For example, I have a really good friend. I'm totally convinced that there's a reason that you had that experience. I don't know what it is, but definitely a foreshadowing of what was about to come. Today, I was talking to one of my dearest friends, We hadn't talked in about three weeks. And we talk usually every Saturday or Sunday. So I reached out this morning, just felt compelled to reach out to her and say, hey, we haven't talked for a couple of weeks. You gonna be free anytime today? We could just sit and chat. I miss you. And she immediately shot back, I'll be home by such and such a time. I can't wait. So I'm like, cool. Now, unbeknownst to, because you don't normally know any, so just everybody knows, you don't normally ever know what the podcasts are going to be until the moment we started.
That's true. Yeah. By design. Yes.
By design. We've done it that way on purpose. So one of the podcasts that I've been working on is about generational curses, what they are, how they start, how do you get rid of them, you know, all that stuff. And you can see why I have an interest in generational curses because of the Zoot Suit Man. And I've been working on this podcast off and on for 3 weeks. Normally they take me about one day. So this one has just eluded me and I kept thinking, there's something missing. I can't do it. I pulled it out last week and we didn't do it because there was something missing. I pulled it out this week and then I'm like, nah, there's something missing. So I began another set of podcasts, which we are not doing as well because I felt really compelled to do this. And I'm talking to my friend literally less than an hour before we started. And she said to me, can you do me a favor? And I said, sure, honey, I'll do you a favor anytime you want. And she said, explain to me that she has a person she knows that she met who has contacted her. The woman has been working on what she now believes is a generational curse. I said, okay. She's like, well, she knows this. And she's like, can you help her to get some clarity? Maybe help her to figure out where she's got to go next, something like that, Patty. And I'm like, sure, I can do that. I'll do that because, you know, she needs help and she's your friend. So she was going to send me all the information. And I thought, as I'm telling her, agreeing to this, I'm like, this is what is missing. I've missed some component of this that I'm going to learn about by helping this lady. Can't wait to find out what it is. But this is how my whole life goes, like little bits and pieces of stuff that come out of nowhere and fill in the gaps. It's a really, sometimes it's a little confusing way to live your life, but I guess I'm used to it by now. So, but I just wanted to, I just felt compelled that tonight wasn't the night to tell just ghost stories, which was what I was planning on doing. I wanted to tell stories that were close to home, kind of give you a window on our world. And this morning, again, a last foreshadow, if you will. This morning, as I started to do the other stuff, I was looking for haunted houses for sale, just to see if they had buy stories with them. Because like, I literally just throw stuff on the internet and start looking and then something jumps out at me. I go, oh, that's where I'm headed this week. Okay. And I don't have any grand plan. And if you all thought I did, I apologize for breaking the bubble. But I literally go wherever I'm sent. You know, I get this feeling about something and go there. So I came, the very first thing that pops up, I put in haunted houses for sale. And this is what I get. When most people think about fairies, they perhaps picture a sparkling Tinkerbell from Peter Pan or another heartwarming and cute fairy or fairy godmothers that populate the Disney movies and children's cartoons. But these creatures have a darker origin and were once thought to be more like undead, blood-sucking vampires. In the secret commonwealth of elves, fauns, and fairies, 1682, folklorist Robert Kirk argued that fairies are the dead or of a middle nature betwixt man and angel. This association is particularly prominent in Celtic lore. And then he goes on to talk about how they attack people, suck their blood, steal their spirit, take their energy, all of these different things. And I'm like, okay, how did we get from buying haunted houses to this? I don't know how the computer made that leap, but that is the very first thing that popped up this morning. Sometimes the universe, God, whatever you want to call it, but I believe in God, God takes you where he wants you to go, and you just have to hold on by the seat of your pants and go where he says. So what are the odds in 12 hours, which would have been about 12 hours, I would have that story from my son, be reminded of that story from the podcast, and come across this to tell us that we need to take a deeper dive into the darkness of the fairyland. In fact, I've learned an awful lot this afternoon, so wait till you see that podcast when it pops out.
I would say the odds for somebody in your position would be much, much greater than somebody in my position.
So it's just bizarre sometimes. But anyway, so I hope you all got a chance to enjoy this. I hope you do enjoy it, because I know it's not the classic storytelling. This is my weird and haunted life. And this is how the stories develop. They come out of nowhere. I once had a lady that was interviewing me for a magazine ask me that, where do you get your stories from? And I laughed and I said, they find me. I don't ever find them. I can be working. When I was young, I worked at McDonald's, and I can remember this young man coming in who worked there too. It's like my fifth or sixth day. Still didn't know hardly anybody, because, like, you know, if you're working in a place like McDonald's, you don't have any time to talk. You just sit for 20 minutes in a break room and run back out and try to do your job, because it's chaos. And it's hard work, for those who don't know it. It's pretty hard work when you're, you know, physically you're on your feet, and mentally, because you got people yelling at you all day because they thought their milkshake should have been 30 seconds faster or whatever. And this kid's sitting there, and he just looks at me and he said, I know I don't know you, but I feel like I can trust you. And then he just began to pour out all this stuff. Hmm. And my whole life has been that way. People just find me, or stories find me out of nowhere. They accidentally show up on the internet. I go to do an interview about one thing and five other things happen instead. And that's just been my life. And you guys get to tag along with it, whether you know it or not, because 99% of my podcasts literally find me. And with that, I'm going to wish you all a good evening. Let me know if you want to hear any more of my weird world, or if you want me to go back to the business of telling a good ghost story. I have a lot of those to tell too. And I thank everybody for listening.
Thanks a lot too. Good night.
Good night. My daughter-in-law is literally outside the window right now looking at me, making faces, and I just glanced up and saw the motion, and she's like literally making faces at me.